Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
COTA has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
The Athletic FC Podcast Network.
Hello and welcome to Pod on the Tyne, your Chelsea smashing Champions League bound, almost, podcast dedicated to Newcastle United from the Athletic FC. I'm Taylor Payne and we start today with some correspondence. Dear Taylor, thank God you're back.
Said nobody ever.
Very good. I was listening to last week's pod whilst jogging after work. When Chris mentioned staying in the Star Wars hotel, my first thought was, well, at least the room won't have seen as much action as the average hotel room. Much to my disbelief, Chris then went on to take quite the opposite view, and George then described it as a sex hotel or a swingers hotel 13 or 14 times. I think this shows a massive disconnect with reality and reveals how little Chris and George understand about romance. Sci-fi themed mid-priced hotels with bunk beds are genuinely not high on the list of turn-ons. Clearly, you provide the podcast's only dose of sex appeal. Absolutely right. Wow. And another week with those two incels at the helm.
Wow.
Might have seen the podcast collapse into an audio version of The Undateables. That's from Maxi in New South Wales, Australia.
Well, I'm sorry. I take an exception to that, Maxi. I referred to it as a sex hotel or swingers hotel 18 times, not 13 or 14 times. So please get your facts right in future.
Yes, very good. Au contraire, mon ami. This is another one. It was myself and my friend Ruby who bumped into Chris and George a few weeks ago in Mother Mercy in Heaton. I'm sure we had a lovely chat about the legendary status of Cupman and manager Eddie Howe, the former world-class winger Jacob Murphy, and an in-depth discussion about Newcastle PSR status for the next few seasons. Well, maybe not. That shows you why you don't have espresso martinis before 7 p.m. I thought George had said the season had been delicious, and we cannot argue with that. Signed, Haley. George.
Well, I'm pleased we've got to the bottom of that. Yeah, Chris and I being approached in a bar. Thank you indeed to Haley and Ruby. Yeah, that clears that one up.
Yeah,
as I said at the time, yes, it's delicious. Not understanding at all what Haley had said to me.
So before we get into the meat of this, hello chaps, hello George Corgan, you all right?
I'm very good, thank you. Yeah, how are you?
I'm not too bad at all. I've had a lovely weekend in Germany and I'm ready to get back on with this and get through to the end of the season. We've got Jacob Whitehead here as well. Jacob, lovely to have you back.
Hello, how are we doing?
We're good. Are you okay?
I'm good. I watched a game from Brighton, actually, scene of Newcastle's struggles the previous weekend, but it felt quite topical.
Yeah, one of Chris has left his mark down there. Well then, let's...
Well, we left his lightsaber down there. Oh, sorry, we're not allowed to talk about sex hotels, sorry.
Good Lord. Let's move on very quickly.
So the time is a ludicrously early 10:18 a.m. We are sat in the St. James's Park press box. The sun is baking down. I'm going to have to put some sun cream on it soon because I look like a tomato. But we are, well, just over an hour and a half away from kickoff at St. James's Park. Newcastle United against Chelsea, fourth versus fifth in the very tight Champions League race after Aston Villa won last night. Nottingham Forest play afterwards. Man City drew at Southampton. George, how are you feeling ahead of this one? It seems like there's quite a lot of nerves, and I've spoken to a lot of people going into this.
No, I've given up nerves this season. I've learnt my lesson from previous big occasions when I've been nervous, apprehensive, fearing the worst, and then this version of Newcastle United have just steamrolled all over that. Can talk about the second leg of the League Cup match against Arsenal here. Can talk about Wembley, of course. And I don't quite sort of share the same sentiment as I've talked about on the pod before. I mean, Newcastle have achieved the biggest thing they can possibly achieve this season. They've hit their target. They've qualified for Europe. They've won a trophy. I just sort of, I think I naturally rebel against this idea that the Champions League should be the be-all and end-all. Don't get me wrong, I understand how big it is for the club, for the players that they already have, for people they want to sign in terms of finances. I do honestly get that. But unlike Chelsea, Newcastle have done what they need to do this season. Unlike Arsenal, Newcastle have done what they need to do this season. I do think that puts them in a very different position. And yeah, okay, there's a bit of concern over the last kind of couple of matches. Are they running out of steam a tiny bit? But no, I'm confident and I feel good. I walked into the match today. I walked across the Tanmoor. I feel like I've breathed in about 3,000 green fly. But my day started, Chris, walking past Jason Tindall on Gosforth High Street. He looked immaculate, sun-kissed. He smelt of purest Lynx Africa. I felt good already. I felt great after that, and I still feel great.
Well, that's the big team news, really. We're going to come on to the actual team news in a second, but Jason Tindall will be back on the touchline today as well, which will be huge for everyone, particularly if you're smelling that fragrant, then the fourth official will be in for a whiff of that. Anyway, the team news, this is not official yet, but we believe that, like the Arsenal semi-final second leg that you mentioned, that Newcastle won, that there is going to be potentially a change of system, certainly change personnel. It looks like Joe Willock and Kieran Trippier are out, and therefore Newcastle are going to go to three centre-backs. Sven Botman slotting into the middle. We suspect Jacob Murphy goes to wing-back alongside Livramento. Anthony Gordon can then come in without either of Murphy or Harvey Barnes dropping out. This feels like a big call. It sounds like it's partly enforced because of injuries there, but also a change of system for a big game. Newcastle were defending a two-goal lead on that occasion, but were also brilliant. Does that concern you, George, that there might be a change of system and change of personnel?
Well, again, I mean, it certainly did in that second leg of the League Cup semi that you mentioned. It was like, oh God, really, for this match? And it just sort of fed into that apprehension I felt, apprehension that was just swept away. This is a way of getting Anthony Gordon back into the team without disrupting too much, you know, around it. There's been sort of talk, you know, do you drop Harvey Barnes? He's been very, very good, perhaps less so at Brighton when Gordon was starting to look back to his best. You know, do you take out Jacob Murphy, who is, you know, I think it's fair to say is less effectual away from home than he is at home? This allows Newcastle's most effective players to stay in the team. I don't like seeing Kieran Trippier come out of the team because his leadership has been so important, as well as playing at right back. But no, I feel confident, and I feel, you know, I think it's important that Newcastle don't lose this match. I do think that is important. A win, you would be talking about them almost being there in terms of Champions League, I think, because of what it does to Chelsea. But first and foremost, it's vital they don't lose. How about you?
Yes, I agree with that. I think the problem with that is that the mentality is you can't go into the game thinking we can't lose this, and Eddie Howe won't. And so Newcastle have to go and target a win. A win would make the huge step towards Champions League qualification. A draw certainly wouldn't be terminal. It wouldn't be ideal, but to keep them in it. A loss, though, could really shift the momentum. I'm confident, not as confident as you necessarily. I'm going to go for a 2-1 Newcastle United victory. And I know you don't like predictions, so I'm not going to put you on the spot. Instead, we shall check in at full time when hopefully Newcastle have taken that massive step towards Champions League football for next season.
You know what it means, Newcastle United and Chelsea. The war flags display, very impressive again. Black and white foil flags in strike formation. And a banner at the bottom, just above the advertising boards, pitch side, that says get into them. Chipped in behind for Gordon to chase. Gordon gets there before Caicedo. Good challenge. Chelsea bring it clear. Tonali wins it back though. Bruno edge of the area. Barnes, and it runs for Murphy. Low cross. Tonali! Sandro Tonali! Inside 2 minutes. What a start at St James's. Just what they needed. And now Sanchez goes long. Jackson all over Botman, free kick, Botman down, yellow card for the Chelsea striker. Yeah, he's caught him with the arm in the face.
He's going to
referee's
love it.
Referee's going to the monitor.
You know what this is.
John Brooks gives the VAR signal. Reaches to his other pocket and produces a red card for the Chelsea striker, Nicholas Jackson. 40 yards out, right side. Tanali drives it. Dan Byrne is free. He's able to bring the ball under control with his left boot. Nice little pass inside for Bruno. But think about the shot. Bruno, down! The captain wins it. Bruno Guimarães out on the left from Dan Byrne's ball with a curling, dipping shot over Robert Sanchez to give Newcastle United a massive victory over one of their Champions League rivals. They have been up against it for the entire second half, but Chelsea haven't made their pressure pay. And it's Bruno, the captain, with one of the most important goals he will ever score in black and white.
What you've just heard is the sound of the full-time whistle and the roar that has gone up as Newcastle United run out 2-0 winners against 10-man Chelsea at St James's Park. It was far from straightforward. Should have been far easier, really, for them after Chelsea were down to 10 men. First half, when Jackson was sent off for a ludicrous challenge on Sven Botman, stuck his arm up in the air. Newcastle were already leading 1-0 thanks to Sandro Tonali's early goal. They were breathless early on, lost a bit of their intensity in the second half, seemed to tire. 10-man Chelsea improved. Newcastle lost their way a bit, changed system. And it wasn't until the stroke of the 90th minute that Bruno Guimarães' heavily deflected shot gave Newcastle a 2-0 victory. Newcastle players are hugging on the pitch. They don't look like they're celebrating too much because they know the job isn't done yet, but this is one massive step towards Champions League qualification. By my calculation, if they win one of the last two games, they're mathematically there, barring a dramatic overturn of goal difference to Aston Villa. George, describe what you've seen just there. It seemed like Newcastle were in cruise control, but then didn't really feel like that during the second half.
No, it didn't. I mean, I love that first half. Newcastle showed intent right from the start. That moment when Tonali goes into Romeo Lavia in the second minute, the ball goes to Bruno, then it goes out wide to Murphy. Tonali finishes that move, second minute. Newcastle's intent was extraordinary. The intent of the crowd was unbelievable. You think they're going to be helped on the way by being up against 10 men. Didn't prove to be that way. Chelsea were much better with a man down, but really the game had been lost to them in those early moments. Newcastle's noise, the intent, the way they played in that first half was just superb. They lost their way a bit. I think also tiredness played a part. Botman coming in, the different formation. I think midfield became a bit of a problem for them to solve in the second half, and they didn't quite get there. But like the start of the game and the end of the game were brilliant. There's been some proper needle in the second half there. The game has just ended with Maresca refusing to shake Jason Tindall's hand. Tindall's been involved in a bit of argy-bargy with Cucurella on the touchline as well. But I mean, the thing that I just want to talk about is that big game mentality that Newcastle have now. I mean, you've probably got those stats again about the way they played against the top six, but it's like it's the way that this idea of Newcastle and big games, they just eat up these big games now, don't they? We've seen it all this season. It's been an absolutely extraordinary run of form, and in the games where they've had to turn up and do it, they've done it.
Totally right. So it's 8 games played at St James's Park against so-called big six sides this season. Newcastle have won 6 of those and drawn 2. They've beaten Chelsea twice, who haven't scored at St James. The same with Arsenal, obviously, in the League Cup for both of them. And now Newcastle go to Arsenal next week with momentum behind them. That will be a very, very tough game, but this feels like a significant win in the context of that match. The Chelsea, it feels like it could be very, very damaging for them. And yeah, we'll eat the bones out of this over the course of the next few days, but absolutely huge win for Newcastle.
Yeah, and I just want to talk about the crowd a bit again. There had been concerns about what the atmosphere might be like. It's such an early kickoff. You know, just brilliant before kickoff. The club had given away a free drink to every fan who wanted it, but it was just brilliant. And you know, that feeling of team and fan base in harmony was just there for all to see and hear. right from the start. You know, it wasn't in the past. You would see Newcastle wilt or crumble. They just don't do that, this team. Really, really very, very special. And today, you know, today, I would say that not always does a scoreline tell a story, but today it has. You know, it was the result that meant more than anything today. They've done it. They've closed it out. It's a clean sheet. It's a 1-0 victory. They absolutely have got the job done.
It was actually 2-0 in the end, but that doesn't really matter.
I'm going to have to stick to my guns on this. It's a 1-0 victory. No, you're right. There you go. So my head's gone. Newcastle's head didn't go. My head's gone. It was a 2-0 victory, wasn't it? Yeah. Yeah, thanks for that reminder. Yeah, 2-0. 2-0 victory. Yeah.
Thanks for clarifying that, George. And yeah, we'll sign off from there now.
Come on, you Maggies.
Okay then, George, 3-4 fucking 2-1. What's all that about?
Well, yeah, I mean, as we heard in that sort of clip there, the news had filtered out that Eddie Howe was going to change the system. Obviously, no Kieran Trippier, no Joe Willock too. And yeah, they sort of moved into the three at the back. And I mean, it was pretty seamless, really. If you compare that start to the start against Arsenal in the League Cup semi, Newcastle had just gone on with it, didn't they?
They certainly did. And it's been said in the past by a few people that Eddie Howe has no plan B, Jacob. I mean, surely he's on plan X by now.
Just because Eddie Howe plays 4-3-3 most of the time, that doesn't mean that that's just one plan. He's constantly tinkering with it. I mean, we just see with that the midfielders are often in different slots every week. It's stuff which we don't understand, like pressing patterns. But this is, it hits you in the face, doesn't it, when it's 3-4-2-1. It's very different. And you can't make any argument it didn't work. And it wasn't just that they had such a good first half. I think he knew as well when to change it in the second half and just sort of settle the game down a little bit when it looked as if Chelsea was starting to get back into it.
It was a fast start from Newcastle, George, wasn't it? There was plenty of intensity there. Free pints for breakfast as well. I'm sure that helped that atmosphere inside the ground, which was fantastic, in spite of that early kickoff.
Yeah, and I wanted to mention that in what we were recording on the day. I mean, yeah, the club felt the need to offer a free pint to everybody, but like the atmosphere was just brilliant. Yeah, any of those fears about it affecting the noise levels, absolutely blown away right at the start. It was such a great noise. It was one of those moments where it feels like a force of nature at St James's Park, and it was the perfect start. It was the perfect start in terms of that intent. And then the team played in the same way, didn't they?
Well, it was great attitude right from the off, wasn't it? And it was a great move that led to the goal, epitomised by Sandro Tonali and his sort of tenacious tackling. And George, you wrote about that moment as well, didn't you?
Yeah, I mean, I just love that whole thing. The noise off the pitch, the noise on the pitch. And yeah, I mean, Chris isn't here, unfortunately, to give us a kind of blow-by-blow description of the goal. But, you know, it starts as that moment. There's a challenge on Anthony Gordon, the crowd are baying for a penalty. Gordon is claiming a penalty, but the game goes on. The ball comes to Romeo Lavia, and before he knows it, Sandro Tonali's on him. And it was just brilliant.
If you look at the footage of that moment, the distance Tonali covers in the space of time from when Lavia actually receives the ball, Tonali's still quite a long way from him, and he covers the distance so quick. It's terrifying.
It's like a game of chicken, two people running at each other, and you expect one to slow down, and obviously Lavia's not running, but Tonali is, and he just doesn't stop. And so there's like a moment of hesitation. He gets the ball, gives it quickly to Bruno. Bruno spreads it out wide to Murphy. Murphy, brilliant cross into the box, and of course Tonali is there to meet it. And I sort of written, but it was like I was thinking this at the time. It was like, do you know, sometimes, like when you're living life, do you have like a theme tune in your head when you're like just doing something, like, I don't know, going to the shops, or like, I don't know, playing football or running or doing what you're doing? There was a theme tune in everybody's head at that point, and it was the Champions League theme.
Yeah.
I mean, it just was. It was like, that set the tone. And there was plenty more drama in the game as it turned out. But that was the moment that the game was won, I think. You know, it was that set the tone for everything. Everything came from that start. Chelsea were caught absolutely cold, and it was just perfect. It was beautiful. It was such a beautiful moment. I mean, I would like to spend 25 minutes talking about Sandro Tonali. I'm sure Jacob would too. But it's like, we take it as read now that he plays like this week in, week out. He is such a fantastic footballer. Nominally playing in this deeper role, that's meaningless. He gets everywhere around the pitch. He's always looking forward. He's always scanning the pitch. And perfect.
This was a deliberate plan, though, from the start, wasn't it? Jacob Bruno said that the game plan was to score early because they know Chelsea concede early goals and had stats on it.
I like to give Eddie Howe credit when it's due. I think every team does like to score early. At the same time, I'm a little bit reluctant to say they're totally reinventing the wheel.
I think what he meant was that idea of getting right into
from the off, yeah,
from the kickoff is the way to do it. Of course, like, would you like to score early? No, I'd prefer to wait. Actually, I prefer to wait until the 43rd minute to score a goal. Yeah, you're totally right. I think that was the point, that they'd seen that Chelsea make a habit of starting slowly, and if they can start quickly, that might be an avenue of success for them.
The Nicholas Jackson sending off didn't exactly help them though, Jacob, did it?
No, it did. Taylor, it did.
Well, I suppose it did. Yeah. The Nicholas Jackson sending off, maybe deliberate, Jacob, maybe not. It's the little look, isn't it, that does him no favours, I think, on the VAR review.
It's a really weird instant. I don't know what he's trying to do. Because if you're trying to elbow someone, you're trying to hit them with the point of your elbow when your arm's at maximum velocity moving. And he's sort of already extended it. He sort of runs into him with his elbow out and looks at him as he does it. It's just really odd. I don't think he was trying to take his head off, but he does still run into him with an elbow in the head. So, like, it's a red card.
I think he's kind of expecting Botman to jump and he's trying to kind of lever him out the way a little bit. But Botman ducks down first and I think he catches him right in the side. But he catches him really hard. And I think as soon as you see that on the VAR review on the slow motion, it just looks horrific, doesn't it?
Red card, no doubt. Yeah. No doubt at all.
Absolutely. 1-0 up at half time then. Opposition a man down, St James's Park vibrant. An easy win, right? Easy win, George, yeah?
Well, I mean, I think we were all thinking that. Yeah, it felt perfect. Newcastle were just, I mean, I have to say, Newcastle were just really good in that first half. The only thing that let them down was in the final third. They didn't take their chances. It took Chelsea something like 19, 20 minutes to muster a single shot. And that felt like it was reflective of the game in itself. They were well on top. But it didn't prove to be easy. I mean, obviously, there is that horrible cliche about it being quite difficult to play against 10 men. I think there were a couple of things that changed. I think, firstly, Chelsea's attitude. I think they were a lot better in the second half. They just hadn't turned up. You know, they hadn't turned up in the first half. And they did turn up in the second half, albeit once the game was, you know, was out of their hands in terms of control. They also put more men in midfield. I think that made life a bit easier for them and a bit harder for Newcastle. There was suddenly, they found themselves a bit overwhelmed. And so, you know, have to give them credit. I think sometimes we're guilty as a fan base, as a podcast. We only talk about ourselves. That's fair enough. That's what we're thinking about. That's what we're looking at. Chelsea were on the same number of points as Newcastle before this game. Therefore, they're a half-decent team. They have to be. And they certainly showed it in the second half. And it became very difficult.
I thought Colwell had a really good game for them and actually kept Isak pretty quiet for the vast majority of it. I thought he made a real difference playing
absolutely.
For the
I think once they went down to 10 men as well, they kind of lifted their intensity to where it should have been from the start of the game, you know. They didn't have it in the first half, and then suddenly when they realised, shit, we're down to 10 men, we're going to have to do something different here.
Well, we talk about sort of how Newcastle might be in terms of nervousness, whether it's the crowd, whether it's the team, in terms of the stakes, this idea of it being a sort of Champions League shootout. I think Newcastle handled that much better in the first half. I think Chelsea had almost had a shot to nothing once they were a goal down and a man down. And so it was like they were lifted and they had a greater sense of freedom. But they were up against it because of the scoreline and because of the number of personnel.
Chelsea had a bit of a spell of pressure. Eddie Howe changed things up, brought on Lewis Miley for Sven Botman and Emil Kraft for Anthony Gordon. Went to a back four, Jacob, and tried to solidify the shape a little bit, didn't he?
Yeah, and it makes sense because I guess it allows Newcastle to just settle into patterns they know better defensively. Like, it's obviously he does train them to play different tactics, but this is what they're most used to, and it made sense, and it did. I know there's the James chance late on, but that I don't think was quite as major a chance as some people maybe make out, a flicked header from quite a long way out. But I think generally
it was made out in commentary like it was a really good chance, but I don't think it was.
Yeah, and I think they did actually. It was still a bit nervy before before Bruno's goal, but the last 20 minutes were much better than that middle of the second half period.
There were some yellow cards flying around as well for whinging and some feisty episodes, and Chris has told us we have to note Jason Tindall and Kukurea, Mark Kukurea and Maresca all got into it a little bit down on the touchline about whether Maresca refused to shake Jason Tindall's hand. Chris asked him about this and he said, no, I shake Eddie Howe's hand and I think that's enough.
Well, as I said, I'd bumped into Jason Tindall on the way in, and he smelt so beautiful, he looked so great, and he was back to his best. It was like the old 1-2, back on the touchline. Him and Cucurella giving each other a bit of verbals,
allegedly asking him why he likes to dive on the floor all the time, which I think is a great thing to ask somebody in the middle of a game of football.
Yeah, there was a bit of that going on, and of course, you know, all that serves to add to the spice of it. It was a spicy second half. A different facet of Newcastle was called upon. They had to demonstrate that side of their game, be a bit more defensive, aggressive in their defensiveness, if you want to talk about that sort of stuff. And it became a different game for them. But I thought they handled that pretty well too.
We muscled it out in the end. Pub made a couple of great saves though, didn't he? And we have to mention that.
Yeah.
I thought the second one that he tips over the bar is an absolutely wonderful save.
Is the one where he gets down low for me.
Oh, really?
And puts out that left hand. Because I thought he's a big goalkeeper. And to get down that low, it's something you see Courtois do well, but actually very few other big goalkeepers get down to do that well.
The second one was Fernandez, wasn't it? And he just tips. He gets that beautiful little brush tip and it goes off for a corner. And I just think like those moments are huge. It's like one of those games, he's barely involved. He's not involved in the first half. Like I said, it was 20 minutes before Chelsea had a shot. But in those like really big moments, you need your big characters your big players to turn up, don't you? And so he did it, you know. And I don't think you can overestimate how important that was. I just think that was huge, huge moments. And you see great teams do this all the time, whether it's Man City, whether it's Liverpool. Like the keeper may not be called upon very often, but when they are, they have to deliver. Nick Pope delivered.
And speaking of big players and big characters turning up, we have to mention big Dan Byrne. Tributes paid on MOTD from Alan Shearer, MOTD2 from Murphy, Danny Murphy, and now POTT. It was unbelievable, wasn't he, on the day, George? I mean,
he was everywhere. Yeah, he was everywhere.
What a season he's had.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely brilliant. Up there, if he's not player of the season, he's top two, top three, without a shadow of a doubt. He's, yeah, again, like, you step up. You have to step up in these moments. And he has made a habit of stepping up ever since he's joined Newcastle. But that game was him. You know, he was absolutely everywhere. And you mentioned in our chat about him, you know, about him shouting for the ball to be delivered onto his forehead before the second goal. He was there at that end of the pitch, Taylor.
Yeah, he was being marked by Neto, wasn't he? And he stood in acres of space and he's got his arms out like the Angel of the North and just says, give us the fucking ball.
Yeah.
Which we did. And he then played a little flick ball inside for Bruno and Bruno scores. So there's a Dan Byrne assist.
We haven't and we aren't on this show going to talk a lot about the Newcastle's badge, you know, the badge redesign, which they're talking about sort of reviving and modifying the current badge as opposed to sort of reinventing the whole thing. If they were to reinvent it, Dan Byrne with his arms stretched out like that,
yeah.
I wouldn't mind that. Or the header at Wembley. I would take that. So we're mentioning it in passing this week. We will come on to talk about the badge and what that means in future. But yeah, he's become an iconic player for Newcastle. He's, you know, signed at the time he did.
Yeah.
Is he going to be a stand-in? He never thought so. He insisted not. Now he's a mainstay. He's a ledge.
He's a ledge. So 6 wins and 2 draws from Newcastle's 8 games at home against the so-called Big Six, Jacob. This is what elite teams do, isn't it?
I've just been so impressed by the fact that last season and the season before, it felt like there's some games which, in a way, against the Big Six, they sort of took off, in a way. Not totally, but it was sort of like, we don't think that we're going to win this one. Let's go a bit easy on it. Or maybe it's a sort of subliminal thing. And this season, I'd argue, the only one you could make an excuse for was the Liverpool game in the league just before the cup final. Where, of course, there's factors why they didn't do that. And obviously, they won the game that mattered by keeping some stuff back. So, been incredibly impressive.
And we've got a few more stats as well, sent in especially by Chris. Newcastle's sixth successive home league victory means they've won 12 Premier League games at St James's Park this season, matching their 22-23 tally, and their highest total, racking up 15 back in 2002-2003. Jacob Murphy's assisted 12 goals in the Premier League this season, the most by any Newcastle player in a campaign since Norberto Solano in 1999-2000. Newcastle picked up their 20th Premier League win of the season, the first time they've won 20-plus games in a single season since 2002-2003, and when they got 21, which was the last time they finished in the top three of the division. So one man listening avidly to Razor and Ando on Sunday was Mark Allison, also known as Run Geordie Run, who's now well into his mammoth 3,200-mile charity run across the USA. Here's a quick update from Mark.
Hello, Taylor, George and Chris. This is Mark Allison, Run Geordie Run, reporting from Pennsylvania on day 11 of the run across the USA. The last time we spoke was in St. James's Park, of course, and a lot has happened since then. Where do I start? Well, day one, which was May the 1st, I stood on the pier at Coney Island, just the other side of Manhattan. I was joined by Newcastle supporter and Toon Army NYC member Ben. He saw me through Brooklyn safely, and then I was joined by Steve, a Geordie exile Newcastle supporter. He saw me safely through Manhattan, not before we had an impromptu visit to Dylan's Bar, where a lot of expats and Newcastle supporters watch the Newcastle games. And there to meet me was somebody called Eddie, a really good guy who travelled all the way from New Jersey just to meet up, wish me well. And he'd actually been on the end of the run across America in 2011, so it was great to see him again. It was a great launch, if you like, out of Manhattan, therefore. You know, I had lots of good company. And there, awaiting at the end, as I crossed into New Jersey on day one, with the support team of Carlton and Deb, who were doing a sterling job. So it took a few more days to get into Pennsylvania, and we've been met with torrential rain, scorching hot days, getting up to 30 Celsius, thunder and lightning, more scorching hot days. Now I'm about 70% of the way through Pennsylvania, so some good progress has been made. My body's holding up pretty well, ankles and above, I'm in a good place, but my feet, however, as ever, are disintegrating. Deb has done wonders to keep me moving. It's involved a lot of painful ice treatment, a splash of vinegar here and there, which really does make me wince and say some naughty words, but that's to be expected with such treatment, I suppose. Up to day 11. This is day 11. Had a bit of a setback this morning. I managed 7 miles, and I said to the support team, just as I got over the 300-mile checkpoint, if you like, for this run, I said, I'm calling it a day. I need a full day's rest, get this right foot looked at, get some ice treatment, and we'll come back tomorrow and hopefully reap the rewards of a little bit of rest. But the big stat, the important stat, is that £16,000 has been raised for St Benedict's Hospice so far, which is due to some incredible generosity being shown. People logging into RunGeordieRun.com, reading the blog, hopefully being inspired and interested in what they're reading. You know, there's a daily update there every day. And there's a donate button, and you go to Just Giving and make a donation to St Benedict's Hospice. So I'm extremely grateful to those people who've made that donation. You know, there are hundreds of them now, and that all adds up to, so far, £16,000 raised. So what we're doing is very worthwhile. There's still a long way to go in terms of mileage, and a long way to go in terms of fundraising also. You know, this is just the beginning, of course. Day 11, another 89 days to go, but so far, so good. It was good to listen to Matthew Raisbeck and John Anderson commentate on the match this morning as I ran along the Lincoln Highway, and there wasn't a soul about at 6:30 in the morning, and the hours thereafter. It was really quiet, being a Sunday and Mother's Day over here in the USA. and I celebrated the goals on the Lincoln Highway, which was a quite strange feeling not being in my seat at St James's Park. Okay, that's my update. Just one last appeal. Please go to justgiving.com, search for Run Geordie Run, and please donate if you're able to. And that really does help St Benedict's Hospice, who, you know, really rely on public donations now more than ever in these such difficult times. So good stuff. Good stuff. Thanks, Chris. Thanks, George. Thanks, Taylor. This is Run Geordie Run, checking out from Pennsylvania.
I'd eat orchid.
So Paul Ferris has lived a life of many lives, footballer, physio, barrister, author and podcast guest. He's written two beautifully funny, haunting, raw, critically acclaimed books, The Boy on the Shed and The Magic in the Tin. Now he's back with another one, Once Upon a Toon, which tells the story of his deep, long-standing connection with Newcastle United. And I'm delighted to say that Paul joins us now. Hello, Paul, how are we doing?
Very well, Taylor. Hi, George, how are you?
Hello, very well. Yeah, lovely to have you back.
Absolutely. I might be right in thinking that this is the first time we've ever had a repeat guest, apart from Alan Shearer.
He doesn't count, does he?
No.
Not at all. Paul, your first two books, which you discussed the last time you were on the show, they were very personal, weren't they? And in the second, you detailed your experience with prostate cancer. This one is different, though, isn't it? This is what Alan from work called pure football in his foreword. It's lighter and a bit more lighthearted, isn't it? Was that a deliberate choice this time around?
Very much so. To be honest, Taylor, when I wrote the second one, it's because I was going through that journey of it was very raw when I was writing it, and then I was actually talking to a friend of mine, and I was talking about what I was going to do next, and he said, you know those funny stories and those things that you always tell us, why don't you start writing about those things? And I said, well, who's going to read that? And he said, well, I would read that. And I suddenly thought, actually, no one ever asked me in the pub about my prostate cancer. But they do ask me about Newcastle United, or they do ask me about Bobby Robson, or they do ask me about other things. So actually, it was an easy thing to do, and I started to write it, and actually it then became more about what I was going to leave out than what I was going to keep in.
I love your writing, Paul. I've said that to you before. Obviously, those first two books sort of incredible. And I love the way that you've kind of put this book together. You know, it's only just come out, so I'm still reading it. But it's these tiny little sort of bite-sized chunks. Yes, there are kind of themes there, but it's like there's an anecdote. It's not sort of done in big, long chapters. It's like little anecdotes. There's a portrait of a player. You capture a moment, and then suddenly, you know, in the way that you do so brilliantly, you get hit by a bit of emotion. Like I'm thinking about the sort of little Gary Speed sort of moment. When it came to sort of writing the book, before we talk about some of the stories, why did you do it like that? Why isn't it done in the sort of traditional structure?
I think, George, because of The Boy in the Shed. I think The Boy in the Shed had gone through, I mean, in my head, when I wrote The Boy in the Shed, it wasn't a book about Newcastle United, but there were 18 years of Newcastle United in there.
Yeah.
And it flowed as a book and as my life did, very chronologically in the way it was. Whereas actually, I wanted this to be almost a love letter to the city, or almost a love letter to the football club, and actually to those people sometimes who when I worked there, were hugely important. Now, they may well have been the most famous person in the room, like Alan Shearer was, because he was hugely important to me. But they also may have been Alec Mutch, who was really important in the 1980s, who was, if you were within the football club, you would know it. There's a small piece in there on John Shearer, you know, as a fan who passed away very recently. There's bits about Ray Thompson. I wanted it to be about when I think back, you think back of moments. You just think back of moments. I wanted all those moments that meant something to me. I wanted to be in there, and all those people that meant something to me. I wanted to be in there, and that included, I think at the very start, George, if you've read through the first bit, the way things have fallen with this recent League Cup win. I started the book with the League Cup defeat in 1976 with Dennis Stewart's overhead kick because he broke my brother-in-law's heart.
Yeah.
But I did that because my brother-in-law was important to me, and I'll not ruin the book for you, but actually he was on a prostate cancer journey. So I wanted to talk about people who were things and people who were important to me. And I think I'd already done in The Boy in the Shed that chronological stuff around it. So So yeah, I mean, I wasn't sure how people respond to the style of it, but I think I like it. It means you can dip in and out of it, I suppose, as well. But there is, it does flow as well, I hope.
Do you, when you like sort of get to the end of it, or I don't know, after this kind of connection that you've had to Newcastle for so long, I like asking people this question: do you have a sense of what Newcastle United stands for, what it means?
Yeah, I think speaking from what it means to me, I haven't been a part of Newcastle United properly since 2006. So that's a long time. I'm longer now since that period. I was there with Alan very briefly for that 8 weeks, but that kind of doesn't count. But I was there for that period. But 2006 is when I left. But actually, I was at Stowell Street the other day, and I parked in the car park with my granddaughter and my wife, and we ended up in the top floor of the car park, and St James's Park was behind her. And she's 8 years old, and I actually said to her, just stand there for a second because I'm going to take a photograph of you, because actually you don't exist without that stadium. I'm talking to this poor child, saying, what do you mean, Grand? I said, well, that's why we're here. That's why Grand is here. That got me very early when I arrived, and I wrote about it in the book. People had told me Newcastle United, the football team, was sort of the heart of the city, and it was in the city. And then I can remember the first time walking towards it and thinking, actually, they're slightly wrong here. It's actually on the city. It completely dominates the city. And it doesn't, you know, as late as Sunday there, I was in Waterstones doing a book signing, and I was walking through and I was watching people go to the match, and you're just watching this. I don't know, that's the one club thing. There's something that's just, it just gets in you and it doesn't leave, I think. And that's the same for me.
It's magnetic, isn't it? It like draws
oh,
people
it is.
Towards
well, it's like, it really is. And then if you, and you know, it's my, I travelled to pick my daughter up, my granddaughter up, sorry, and my son sitting beside me in the car. If we're not talking about Newcastle United, I don't know what we talk about. that's kind of what my sons talk about. That's kind of, we have a family barbecue. That's what we talk about. You know, we're talking the other day about, imagine going to Arsenal after the season we just had, and we're going to Arsenal. Well, actually, imagine what it's like to be Arsenal. We're going to Arsenal with a chance to go into second place, and we've won a trophy. Imagine how nerve-wracking that must be for us. I left, but it never leaves you. It'll never leave me. No.
Well, that's something in actual fact that we're kind of I've written down, because that did stand out for me. Why does it get under your skin? Why does Newcastle get under your skin like that? I mean, you know, for someone like you who's not from the region, who's not from the city, but it's become very much part of
you. It was very apparent, even when I came as a young boy on trial, it was very apparent, and people from Liverpool who are listening won't agree with this, but I should have had a connection, possibly more of a connection to Liverpool because of my Irish background. And I went to Everton just before Newcastle, and I just felt like, well, that's not for me. And I came here, and I was a very shy, quiet boy, and I came here, and I wouldn't say I fell in love with the place, but by the time I'd gone home after a week, I thought, I met some really interesting people there, or they were quite, he was quite funny, or that was, he sounded a bit like me, or he was, and there was something in the people, in the place, that was, and then you would just, I don't know, I think if you live in this city for any length of time, I'm not quite sure. What do people talk about if they're not talking about the football? I don't know. People within the football club when I worked there talked about nothing else. So you know Bobby Robson, George. You try and talk to Bobby Robson about the politics of the day, and it somehow comes back to Jimmy Greaves. So that's in the football club. You try and do the same outside the football club, it comes back. Friends that I have, you know, like everybody else, you get bombarded with WhatsApp messages. I would say 90% of them involve Newcastle United. My granddaughter goes to school and she comes back and she says, the head teacher at the school said to tell you that he once saw you play for Newcastle United. I thought, God, he must be very unique. But you know, but I mean, it's just that. It's just all consuming, really. I suppose maybe it's the one. Is it the same in Sunderland? Is it the same in other one club cities? But this one is. I mean, I can only speak for this one. It's the only one I know. But it's just everywhere.
I have to ask you, Paul, Alan Shearer and the Nuns, discuss, please.
I love this story.
Well, we travelled to Colorado. This is a bizarre thing about football. Back in the 90s, it was as if the only surgeon in the world was in Vail in Colorado. So it was Dr. Richard Stedman. So once one person went to Dr. Richard Stedman, you could be the best surgeon in the world in concert or in London, but we're not going near you. We're going to get in the plane and we're going to Colorado. So I travelled to Colorado, and these were like lengthy flights. In you go to Denver, another flight into Vail in Colorado, and we arrived at a ski resort, which is Vail's just across the mountain from Aspen. And we arrived at this ski resort, middle of summer, deserted ski resort. I went to the counter and said to the girl behind the counter, "Is there room for Mr. Ferris and one for Mr. Shearer?" And then this voice behind said, "Well, Mr. Ferris, Mr. Shearer will be sharing." And I said, "Oh, why is that?" He said, "Well, I don't quite like being on my own." And I said, "Well, me neither. I'm not quite sure about the dark." And we had that bit of a laugh. And so we shared this room together while he had his surgery, which was fine before he had his surgery. Then when he had his surgery, he was on this continuous passive motion machine, which was just all night, just like, and I was lying awake, just wrecked for the day three. So about day four, Alan said, do you fancy a beer? And I said, "Well, I'll go down and get us some. There's no one in the hotel." So I went down the lift to this deserted bar, this fancy hotel. And I said to the girl behind the counter, "Can I have two beers? No, can I have four beers? Can I have six beers, please?" And I put them in my pocket, and I had two in my hands. And I turned around, and honestly, as I turned around, there were 100 nuns just in the reception area, like full, like in the habits, the whole fully dressed, just like, and I looked at them and I thought, "Oh, my beer. Well, I put the beer back. Well, I go," and I thought, "I know what I'll do. I'll run up the stairs, because they're getting checked in, and I'll push the button and the lift will get me first, and I'll get up the lift before they get there." So I ran up the stairs, my beer's spilling, pushed the button, and this lift door opened, and the lift was just full of nuns. Like, just there. And I was standing there with my two beers, and I said to this nun, "Look, I'm really sorry, this doesn't look the best." And she said, "Son, please don't apologize. Wasn't Jesus' first miracle turning the water into wine? Come in." And so she brought me the lift. So I got in the lift, went up the lift with these nuns with these beers, got in with the Alan who's on this machine. I said, "There's 100 nuns out there." And he said, "Rubbish." I said, "I'm telling you, there's 100. And he said, "Well, tomorrow morning, we're going to go down and we're going to go and find the nuns in." And we actually got up the following day and we were down in this hotel, and there wasn't a nun in sight. There was not a nun within 100 metres of the hotel. So I don't know if he ever believes me that the nuns were there, but they genuinely were there.
Was it very strong beer, Paul? Can I just ask that?
Very strong beer, and I was a very strong Catholic upbringing as well, so I don't know whether I was having a moment, but I mean, where did they come from and where did they go? It's just...
One of life's great mysteries, isn't it?
It is.
Yeah, people have to read about some parts of that journey over when a stray part of Paul's body makes a very unfortunate appearance on the flight.
Absolutely.
But I won't spoil that. In your association with Newcastle, did you ever get to the point where you'd given up on the idea of Newcastle as winners, as trophy winners?
Certainly during the Mike Ashley period, which was, I was only there very briefly, I actually had given up of It felt like it was under foreign occupation to me. I just felt it didn't feel like the football club that I wanted to know and love. Never mind, did know and love. It just didn't feel that way. So I'd definitely given up on. I felt like the ambition. And I, George, you know this. You're right. It wasn't that there wasn't any ambition. There was actually an obvious outward statement of lack of ambition. Almost for me, it felt like anyway. Yeah. I felt like the football club was saying to me, "We're just here, and we're not going to compete. We're just here." And we might get relegated, we might not, but we're just here. So that definitely was the worst period. There were times in the 80s when I first arrived, football was unrecognisable. You know, I made my debut for Newcastle away from home. I think my home debut was maybe 15,000 people at a stadium that was just on its knees. And it was, you know, it was eerily quiet. And so then that was a pretty dark period as well.
Jacob here, who we've got on the call as well. Jacob reads his height in books. Can we get a copy for him to add to his book collection?
Absolutely. For Jacob, definitely.
Oh, brilliant. Thank you very much, Paul. I was disappointed to hear that you didn't get on board with Everton.
You know, do you know what?
My actually, club.
Yeah, and it was, I don't even know what it was. To be honest, Jacob, I'll tell you what, I was... At 16, I think I probably was the most naive 16-year-old you've ever met. And I went to Liverpool, and I went into a changing room with these young boys who were 16, 17, and 18 Scousers, and you can imagine how lively they were. And they were 17 going on 35. And some of the conversations they were having were just like, I was like, Jesus, what the hell is that? I have to go and try that at home. It was that kind of stuff. So it was kind of, and so they were just a bit more worldly wise than I was. But you know, not Everton as a football club. But please don't think that I've got a terrible dislike of Everton as a football club. It was just that it just wasn't right for me. I was too young and too green, really.
When you talked about sort of the Ashley years, Paul, obviously for people who can't remember or don't know, when Alan was appointed manager, you came in. You were basically, it was your job to sort of do a whole audit of the club, basically, wasn't it? And we don't have to kind of rake over old ground necessarily. But Alan has kind of, you know, he's been sort of rehabilitated in terms of Newcastle. You know, his statue has been brought back onto club land, which is brilliant. The club have made a fuss of him. Have you kind of gone through in your own head that process of rehabilitation with Newcastle? I mean, you said that it's never left you, even though you left Newcastle. But have you... I think we all fell out of love with Newcastle a little bit in those years. Have you found your way back?
Maybe not in the way that I once was. I mean, I think I guess, George, without going into too much of my personal circumstances, that thing that with Alan for those 8 weeks was disastrous for Alan, for his career as a manager.
Yeah,
and it was catastrophic for me as on a personal level in terms of financially what I needed to do in my home, things that I needed. So yeah, it actually had a profound impact on me, which does scar you, without doubt it scars you. So I don't go to the games as often as I should. When I do, I feel as passionate as I always did, but I don't, my kids are always, Dad, why are you not coming? You know, we're going, and but like lots of people, the cup final happened. You're watching the cup final. I watched it 2 years ago with my then 6-year-old granddaughter. I bought her the shirt. She's sitting there with a scarf on. We're watching the cup final. We lost. It was just an awful experience. Then you fast forward to this one. The same girl's 8 years old now. She's in the shirt. She's got the bit on. And I said to her, I'm just warning you, Isla, if Newcastle United should score, or if we win, Granda might frighten you today. And she said, what do you mean, Granda? And then we scored, and she's like, Jesus. She's like, because I nearly hit the roof. And I don't get that. That's from within. Something that will never leave. Yeah. But there's no doubt I was scarred, Joe. There's no doubt. I'm scarred by some of my own decision making, I think, and some of the things that I did with it. I can't blame anybody else but myself and some of the stuff that I chose to do. But the day I left, it's the strangest thing. The day I left in 2006 as a physiotherapist, I'd actively studied law for 2 years.
Yeah.
And I was actively pursuing something else. And I thought, this is the best day of my life. I'm going to leave this thing here. I'm going to go off and be this lawyer. And I walked to the gates of the door of the training ground. And Ray Thompson, my friend, was there. And he said, well, this is it, mate. And give me a hug. And I got in the car and I couldn't get out the gate. I started to cry. And I thought, what are you crying for? You've been doing this for 2 years, but actually it's such a big thing. It's such a big, big thing in your life. I've chosen to write a book about it. I hope when you finish the book, it's not a book where it's, isn't that a terrible place and wasn't he an awful person and didn't that person?
No, no.
It's very much a book that should be very uplifting, I think, and actually show that the good people that work there, the amazing things that happen can only happen at a football club. So I've tried very hard to do that and not make it a book of
It isn't like that at all. It's very uplifting. It's emotional, but it's very funny. There's loads of great stories in it. But you know, as always with you, we go off in sort of interesting tangents and conversations because you're such a smart man. And that kind of leads me, maybe this should be our last question, but who are you? I mean, it's like, if I ask that question of myself in terms of, you know, profession, I've only got one answer, and that is I write about football. That's what I've always done. If you've been a footballer, are you always a footballer in your own head? Or are you a physio? Are you a barrister? Are you a writer? Are you an amalgamation of all those things? I just find that like a fascinating.
Yeah, it's a really interesting point because my wife tells me off for this because I always, if someone asks me what I am, I say I am the chief executive of a health and fitness concept because that's what I am. That's my job. That's what I do on a day-to-day basis. Flex. And she'll say, she'll pop up to the person behind. She'll say, he's also an author, you know. And I'll say, no, I'm not sure about that. And she'll say, no, you are. You need to say that. You need to say that out loud because I've actually struggled sometimes to, I don't know if my mum and dad did it to George, but I'll give you an example. When I was a kid, my next door neighbor would knock the door and her name was Annie Harrison. I don't know how I've ever gone this. And I opened the door once and I said, "Mum, Annie's here." And she just clipped me around the ear and she said, "It's Mrs. Harrison to you." No, that's just the way, that's the way it was. And I think I struggle still with some of that. I struggle to actually say, I would struggle to be in a room and say, "Oh, hello, I'm Paul. I used to be a professional footballer, a physiotherapist, was barrister. I'm an author now." In case you walked away and thought, "What an absolute tosser he is for that." Do you know what I mean? And it's actually just, it's just a stupid way to be, because it's the truth. And it's, so why would you hide? Why would you hide that? But actually, I think it goes right back to maybe that working class upbringing of just don't get yourself too high above where you should be. That's the best explanation. But in answer to your question, I'm a chief executive of a health and fitness business, and I'm an author.
A very good one.
That's where I am now.
Wonderful stuff. Paul's going to be appearing at the Live Theatre in Newcastle to talk about Once Upon a Tomb with Steve Harper and Alan Shearer on Wednesday, May 28th. So get along to that if you can. That should be a brilliant night. And George and Chris are going to be there as well. The book's published by Bloomsbury, and it's available at all good bookshops. Paul, thank you so much for coming back on, mate. It's been an absolute pleasure to have you.
It's been a great pleasure. I take a great pleasure in saying this. If you haven't got a ticket for that event, you're not going, because it's sold out. So I'm very excited about that. So George,
really?
I'll be looking forward to see George there. And Jacob, I'll make sure we get a book to you. And Taylor, thank you for your time. And and you, George, thank you.
I love you. Thanks a lot, Paul. Cheers.
Thanks a lot, Paul Ferris. Brilliant stuff.
Cheers, Paul.
Thank you.
Right, we're going to say goodbye to Jacob Whitehead quickly because he has to go and do other things. Thanks for your time, Jacob.
Thank you very much. See you soon. And maybe I'll next speak to you after the big Everton game at the end of the season.
Oh, yes, of course. We'll reconvene after that. So Arsenal away Sunday, 4:30 p.m. on Sky. Shot to nothing for second place in the league, George, this, isn't it?
Well, I mean, it's astonishing to think that if Newcastle win their last two games, they finish second. I mean, it's a great incentive. And yeah, I mean, Arsenal are now flailing a bit, it has to be said. They've gone five games without a win in all competitions, obviously gone out of the Champions League, and yeah, struggling.
Yeah, their season has disintegrated a bit, isn't it? And Arteta is desperately trying to spin positives, and this has the potential to be completely hilarious, doesn't it?
Well, I mean, it does. There's nothing quite like Mikel Arteta fume, we know that. And, you know, Newcastle have made a habit of getting under Arsenal's skin. It's not been purely one-way traffic, but certainly since the takeover, Newcastle's record against them has been very good. And this season in particular, obviously, like those two League Cup semi-performances, yes, were Newcastle absolutely at their best. I mean, possibly, you know, overall, those two games up there with the most impressive performances under Eddie Howe. So professional, so committed, so clinical. And yeah, I mean, Newcastle will have to be like that again to get a good result. And, you know, I think it has to be said that Arsenal, I'm sure, would love nothing more than to get a bit of revenge, yeah, against Newcastle, who have been a bit of a bogey team for me.
And they are a good football side, of course, George. They've got some, yeah, wonderful players. They're going to be well up for it, aren't they? Mikel Merino won't be available for selection against his former club after he was sent off against Liverpool as well. So that's a bit of positive news for Newcastle. Any fitness news for us, George, that you're aware of? Does it really matter? We're mint regardless, aren't we?
Well, I think that's true. Yeah, I mean, we'll have to see what happens in terms of Trippier and Willock. I mean, we were told at the weekend that those injuries weren't too serious, so hopefully they'll be back. Have to see how Sven Botman reacts to his comeback. We've heard that, you know, Newcastle are going to try and get some minutes into Jamal Lascelles behind the scenes. Just, you know, he was back on the bench. Good to see that. But yeah, so they're taking sort of precautions there. But yeah, Newcastle. Gillington, I thought, was a miss. I think they did miss his attitude, his commitment, his aggression in the second half against Chelsea. Newcastle don't have a lot of players to choose from, but the ones they do have are very good.
I certainly did miss him sitting in the stands wearing his 1996 Newcastle United retro shirt. That was wonderful. Him
that
and
was
his missus.
Great, wasn't
love it?
It.
Brilliant stuff. Chris Woff will be back next week, bringing Sexy back to preview Everton on the final day. So if you want to get in touch, give us an email at podonthetyne@theathletic.com. Thank you so much to Jacob Whitehead, of course, to Paul Ferris, who was on earlier. And thank you to you, George Colgan, for your time.
It's a cast of thousands this week, hasn't it? But it's been great. And absolutely. Yeah,
it's like an Avengers
it
movie.
It has. What would we be? Not the Avengers. We would be the... Well, I don't know. We need someone to tell us. No, it's not there.
Just leave it if it's not there.
And we love your correspondence, so please carry that on.
Absolutely right. Thank you very much. Have a wonderful week. We shall speak to you on the other side of that massive game against Arsenal. Take care. Goodbye.
Anthony Gordon can then come in without either of Murphy or who's the other person? Or Harvey Barnes dropping out, yes. Losing my trail of thought there, but yes. So
the book's going to be published by
This is it, just because Eddie Howe plays 4-3-3. Oh god, I can't say that. Let's do that again.
4-3-4-3. What would we be? Not the Avengers. We would be the... Well, I don't know. We need someone to tell us. No, it's not that.
Good luck editing this, Ollie. Keep on.
The Athletic FC Podcast Network.
About Moto Casino? Moto has real Vegas slots. Any game you can find on the floor in Vegas, you can play it on Moto. I like my slots hot. Moto's free to play, like food stamps, in line at the grocery store, at a funeral, in traffic. Keep your eyes on the road. Hop on Moto Casino. Moto Casino got jackpots that are bigger than my belly. Moto, America's hottest free-to-play social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today. Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.